listeners from the far distant future. This is Megan and Emily from May of 2024, desperately building up our Oathbringer coverage so we can get through all of Rhythm of War before Dragonsteel. If you guys want to know what time is like for us at this point, Dragonsteel badges went on sale this morning and they all sold out in an hour. But we're still going to go because, Emily, what do we have at Dragonsteel?
We have a booth. We are a booth.
So, hi, my name is Megan, and I should be riding my exercise bike.
My name's Emily. I should be eating dinner.
But instead...
We're making a podcast.
Oh my gosh. Hello, listeners. Welcome back. We are so happy to have you. This is a mere 2 days after we did our giant live read end of part three, and we're still stewing in the big emotions of that, but... this week, we are reading the interludes, interlude 7, Envoy, interlude 8, Mem, interlude 9, True Labor Begins, and interlude 10, Schiller, and interlude 11, Her Reward. And if that weren't enough, we are getting started in part 4 with 88 voices, 89, Damnation, and 90, Reborn. Now, I know that sounds like 87 different things, but they were all pretty short chapters.
They were. Emily, they were little blips.
What did you think of this confetti scattering of storytelling?
So many cool things happened.
Do you have a highlight?
We gotta meet Shalash, freaking finally. And we got Nightblood and Zeth. Those were the big ones.
Ah.
And Adolin. Adolin's a gem. I love him so much.
Excuse me. You will address him as Your Majesty.
I apologize. Adolin. It's going to take me as long as it's going to take him to realize what's going on.
Because he's king now.
He's practically king.
His father abdicated.
Yep.
Dalinar's king of Eurythiru.
Yep.
Adolin,
do you think Dalinar's
next in line?
Gonna try and take over the throne again?
I don't know, but yeah, I mean, technically Gavinor should have been next in line, but he's held
missing.
By the enemy still.
He's missing. Yeah. He's just missing.
But where did he go missing, Emily?
In a bad place.
Who was there?
Bad people.
Uh-huh. And is he, big and strong and an adult?
He's a baby.
He is 2 or 3.
Oh, baby boy.
So, what do you think? Do we just write that kid off
no,
forever?
We're going to go rescue him. Charge and rescue.
Well, they're not in a really great position to do that, but we'll get to them in a second. First of all, let's talk about these interludes. Let's talk about Envoy. What's going on with Venli?
So Venli is basically I don't want to say puppet, but she's going around.
She's a propaganda machine.
A propaganda machine. That's a better way to say it. She's going around and is kind of being brought out to tell the story of how the listeners are now in charge and how you should all become a listener and you should all join us because this is your heritage. And what better way to, like, celebrate your heritage than kicking all the Alethi out of the country?
So, she has got this speech that she's been giving time and time again, and we're getting some point of view. She's talking to Parshendi, who were previously enslaved by the Alethi, and mentions that these slaves were similar. Even their jokes were Alethi, often biting towards those to whom they were closest.
Oh, yeah.
I feel I bring a very Alethi style of humor to this podcast.
You definitely
and I'm
do.
I'm sorry about that. So, turns out there are 3 levels in the hierarchy for Odium's people. There are the common singers, who wear the ordinary form that Venli's people had always used.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are those called regals, like herself, who got distinguished forms of power, created by very specific void spren. And at the top were the fused. She's not sure where in the hierarchy spren like Ulim falls, that like... yeah, they outrank the singers, but do they outrank the regals?
Mm-hmm.
So she is kind of like the equivalent of a high prince, I think.
Yeah. But the story that she's telling is not 100% accurate.
Yeah.
The humans waged a war of extermination against us. My sister tried to negotiate to explain that we had no blame for the assassination of their king. They would not listen. They saw us only as slaves to be dominated. Because we know that they did claim they were 100% behind King Gavilar's assassination.
Hey, I was thinking about something.
Yes.
I was thinking about, because we were talking last time we recorded about the like worth of, yeah, they killed our king, so we killed thousands of them in punishment. Mm-hmm. And I remembered their Council of Five, their highest political leaders, all admitted what they had done and sacrificed themselves as recompense for Gavilar's death.
Yeah.
And so that should have been your political leaders for our political leaders. Uh-huh. But because the Alethi placed such a low value on the singers, they were like, no, Gavilar is worth the lives of thousands of Parshendi.
Yeah. But she's pretty critical of these new listeners. She's upset that a lot of them are given forms that, oh, I hope it's this chapter.
If not, listen, we'll cover it all.
Okay, we'll cover it all. She's upset that a lot of them are given forms without having to work for it because, you know, they spent generations trying to figure this out. And she's trying to teach them because there's a Parsh, I don't want to say woman, she calls them a Famalan. This singer woman wears an Alethi dress with the left hand covered up. Again, society is a lie. We make things up. Sort of a thing. And she, Venli's instructing this woman, speak to the rhythms to express apology. Use appreciation to thank someone for correction. Or anxiety to highlight your frustration. Consolation if you are truly contrite. And so she's just like, they have no respect for our history. And they've never had the opportunity to learn it. And I feel like Venli is taking her frustrations out on these fellow listeners because she's in a very frustrating position herself mm-hmm. that she can't out overcome.
Mm-hmm. And when she gives this correction, how does the singer woman reply to her?
Yes, brightness.
And this woman is wearing a hava and has her safe hand covered.
Mm-hmm.
So I
did say that.
Yes, you did. Okay. Sorry. Culturally, they're acting very Alethi, yeah. All of them. Ugh. Anyway, Venli is like, we should get more human slaves for farming.
Mm-hmm.
And Rhine just glances at her and says, you know what? Some of us agree with you. Venli's like, oh, you don't? No, we will need to watch the humans constantly. At any moment, any of them could manifest powers from the enemy. We killed him, and yet he fights on through his surge binders.
Yes, and so I'm assuming they're talking about honor proper. Mm-hmm. And we fight, because I think I asked some of these questions in the previous episode. How can they bind Sprint? So she's asking, basically, how can humans do that? And it comes out humans don't have gem hearts. Which is why the Voidbringers can connect with them, because the Spren take mm-hmm. up residence in their gemstone hearts, which is why we see Spren, you know, Fabrials, that sort of thing.
Can you describe what a listener gem heart looks like?
Yes, they are not gaudy or ostentatious like those of great shells. Clouded white, almost the color of bone, they were beautiful, intimate things.
Bone. And Venli still has a hard time talking about this because the dead body's taboo. Sorry, it's another cultural taboo for her, similar to the taboo they had about moving the dead or touching the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And this fused is like, ugh, you're as bad as those singers walking around with one hand covered.
And she's furious about it.
Cranky.
Very cranky.
Cranky.
But basically, we find out, this is what Ryan says, we must exterminate them. Our people will never be safe on this world as long as the humans exist. Because Ryan's just like, yeah, this shocked us when it first happened. How could humans bond Sprint, yet somehow their bond was more powerful than ours? And so humans are a threat at this point.
Do you remember the singer songs from last book's epigraphs?
Not specific. specifically.
Okay, give me a second. I will pull it up for you. Okay. The spren, this is from Words of Radiance epigraph from chapter 32. This is from the Song of Spren. The spren betrayed us, it's often felt. Our minds are too close to their realm. That gives us our forms, but more is then demanded by the smartest spren. We can't provide what the humans lend, though broth are we, their meat is men. And then epigraph 33. But it is not impossible to blend their surges to ours in the end. It has been promised and it can come, or do we understand the sum? We questioned not if they can have us then, but if we dare to have them again. Ooh. So yeah, there is something much more fulfilling for a spren about the connection with humans than it is with the gem bond with a singer.
I wonder if it's emotions. Like, humans have more uninhibited emotions where the listeners, like, have to consciously attune to joy or rage or whatever.
And from what we've seen, the humans interact with the spren more and treat the spren more like a person. From the discussions that we've seen, Kaladin and Syl and Shallan and Pattern, whereas what we've seen of the singers, especially with the listeners, is that, oh yeah, just so you know, the listeners, specifically what Eshnai and Venli's peoples called themselves. And overall, the race is called singers.
Yeah.
But they go out in the storm, they get a spren in their heart, and then they just have the form. And it doesn't seem like they interact or talk with the spren.
Oh, and they switch the sprens out, too.
Yeah, they switch the sprens out whenever they get a new form.
Yeah.
So, there you go. But speaking of spren and contact with spren, there's a particular spren that's been following Venli around. There's a little
Tinkerbell spren.
A little Tinkerbell. And not only that, this spren blinks to the rhythms.
Yep.
She recognizes curiosity, amusement, and she realizes just now, while she's talking to her spren, she can hear the normal rhythms. She's been listening to ever since the last book when they first got storm form, and she now has her new form granted by the Void Spren. Venli had a very specific set of animus rhythms.
Yeah.
And now she can hear the old rhythms again. Hey.
Hey.
Emily, what do you think about this spren?
I think it's Venli. I think it's Venli's soul.
Venli is the character.
I think it's Eshnai's spren. I think it's Eshnai's soul.
That would be wonderful. That was also my thought the first time I was reading it. So, what are you hoping to accomplish? Your kind betrayed us. Go find a human to bother.
Bother.
I sort of jumped over this, but they're living in a human mansion at this point. And she is frustrated at how much she admires the artistry here. She's looking at swirls in the glass of a wall sconce and the coloration of it. And it was so beautiful. Could they really exterminate the people who had created such beautiful and delicate swirls in the glass?
I'm getting faint Shallan vibes here. Just because she's appreciating the artistry. I know you can have more than one artist in a story, but I'm just saying, I'm kind of getting the Shallan feeling here, so.
Buddy, do you want to be on the podcast? Do you have things to say? Oh, okay. Come here. Come here.
What a goob.
Come on up on the couch with me. You can hang out. All right, let's jump to the beginning of this. Tell me about the heralds who are here.
It's Kalak, K-pop Kalak, and, this one's not Chenarach. She's the soldier. This is the one with the hood. Batar. No, it's not Batar.
Wait, the hood?
It's the female with the hood.
Oh, yeah. Vale?
Vedelediv.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Vev is the... Man, I always mix up Vev and Paula's orders. So let me double check this. Well, Kalak is of the Will Shapers. Kalak is of the Will Shapers, and Will Shapers is about being resolute and a builder. I feel that that really fits Venli. Mm-hmm. And then Viv is about being loving and healing.
Okay.
I think she's the Else Caller.
Okay.
No.
No.
Hala is the Else Caller. Wait. Why doesn't the chart at the back of the book tell me who is whose herald? Okay, here we go. Words of Radiance. I think I've already got it pulled up, maybe. No. 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 Tazalel! Okay. Okay. Come here, heralds. The heralds are the ancient data of Voronism. Viv. That's okay. I cannot believe the page of the heralds doesn't tell me which order. Okay, edge dancers. Viv is the edge dancers.
All right.
Okay, Lift and Viv. Viv is Lift's patron by Vedeletive Slippery Keys. All right, let's see if we can remember that.
All right.
Anyway, loving and healing. I think Venli could use some loving and healing in her life, especially after the loss of her sister. Let's move on to interlude 8. Mem. Emily, tell us about Mem.
I freaking love Mem. Is this the only time we see her?
It's Rafo, obviously.
She is a master at her craft, which is laundry, which is, oh, I love this. There was an art to doing laundry. Sure, everyone knew the basics, just like every child could hum a tune. But did they know how to relax the fibers of a stubborn sea silk dress by returning it to a warm brine, then restore its natural softness by rinsing it and brushing with the grain? Could they spot the difference between a mineral dye from Azir and a floral dye from the Vedan Slopes? You used a different soap for each one. And she talks about, like, trying to get these things out. Like, she takes pride. Like, you would think, like, oh, you're the washerwoman. You just throw stuff in a tub and swirl it around and pull it out and call it good. And that's it. No, like, she is a master. I do my laundry. She's a master craftswoman at her art. I love it.
Who does she do laundry for?
Marais!
Hey! Well, there's a new hire working.
Well, first of all, she's trying to get blood out of it. And she's just like, that man getting blood on his clothes again.
Mm-hmm. It's not just blood, though. She's been trying like 4 different soaps on this very, very stubborn stain. Mm-hmm. And put a little pin in that because we will talk about it at the end of the chapter.
Okay.
But tell me about Palm. Tell me what Palm looks like.
Palm is beautiful. And Mem's just like, why hasn't anyone married this woman? She's gorgeous. The dark-skinned woman was obviously of mixed blood, both Easterner and Westerner. But she, I'm assuming she's tall. I don't know why I assumed that.
I would like to point out that Telenolat has this similar coloring to Shalash.
Okay. But she and Palm take the clothes into the stronghold. I don't know if it's a castle or what, but Mem insisted on not using the servant's entrance. Marais was one of the few who humored her. I love that little thing if she's just like, no, I'm a craftsman. I'm an artiste. I'm an artist, not a bore.
Not a bore. Could have fooled me.
And so, again, we're in Marais' stronghold, and so everyone's watching everyone all the time. There's, like, no way you're going to get out in and out of here undetected. And so she brings Palm in, and they're going to go and put the clothes, I guess, deliver them to Marais. And Palm kind of stops in the doorway and is just, like, looking around at this place. And Mem is just like, stop dallying, Mem reminded her, covering a smile and just talking about, like, how beautiful this was. And, like, oh, she's just a little bumpkin who's, like, very overwhelmed by all of these things. And all of a sudden she turns around and it's, Palm is, like, attacking one of the paintings with a knife. And that's when I'm like, oh, it's Shalash! I'm so excited we finally got to meet her. I mean, we've met her. I'm so excited I finally know who she is.
Confirmation.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they never literally say Shalash in this chapter, but I'll give it to you.
You gave it to me. Yeah.
So, Palm sorry, Moraes arrives and he's like, aha, the masterpiece of the oil sworn, which that is a cameo for Dandos, the oil sworn, named after Dan DeSantos, who is one of the illustrators for this series. Okay. Anyway, Moraes shoves out the guards and offers Ancient One, which is what Amarim called Telenolat, Ancient One, would you care for something to drink? And then Pom is just about to leave, and then what does Moraes say?
I know where Telenolat is.
We don't!
No, we don't!
Let's have that drink, shall we? Moraes asked. My Babsk has been eager to speak with you. Then he glances at Mem. Is that my Azish Cavalry Lord suit? Yes? You got the ether out of it? What? Mem, you're an absolute genius. Not every hunter carries a spear, and this is proof indeed. Go to Condwish. Tell him I approve a 3 fire mark bonus for you. That's so great.
Yeah, you pay your people what they deserve. You give them... Yeah, anyways. Moraes, I'm on your side. You may be a bad dude, but you know how to take care of your people.
All right, so... You have heard, you have seen aethers before in the Cosmere.
Is it the Elantrians?
No.
Oh. Mistborn?
Nope.
The Emperor's Soul?
Have you read The Emperor's Soul?
Yes!
Did you like it?
Yes! We just haven't done it. We haven't done an episode on it because...
Yeah, I thought you hadn't read it yet.
No, I read it. Ted and Jenny had...
Oh, cool.
...an addition to their family, so we haven't got to it yet.
And baby.
Cool. Put a pin in that. I'll try and get stuff moving on that. No, not The Emperor's Soul.
I'm looking at my bookshelf.
We did a big special. We did half of a special on it.
A Warbreaker.
No.
Half a special.
Warbreaker.
Half a special.
We split it with another book. We did a 2-book special once.
The last book possible, Dress of the Emerald Sea.
Yeah. So the sea on Tress's world is made up of aether spores.
Oh.
So aethers in the Cosmere are investiture-filled entities that are separate from shards. So they are a magic in the Cosmere that are not about shards. Mm-hmm. And while it isn't specifically aethers that are on Tress's planet, the spores are somehow a byproduct of aethers.
Got it.
And somehow Moraes got blood and aether onto his outfit. Hey, who's Moraes' Babsk?
I don't know.
And you never will.
Is it Vasher? That's not true.
You can read and find out.
It's a Vasher?
It's not about the movie Kazam.
Okay.
All right. Who are the... Who? Harold. Give me Harold.
We have Chenerach and we have Shalash.
Chach and Shalash. So, Chenerach or Chach is the Herald of the Dustbringers. She's about being brave and obedient. I think that marks Mem pretty well.
Yep.
And then Shalash is the leader of the Lightweavers, patron of the Lightweavers, and her divine attributes about being creative and honest.
Nice.
Why does she hate paintings of herself so much?
So I kind of theorized about this in the previous one. Either she's ashamed of her role, or she wants to erase herself from history. But by doing that and not destroying everyone, not destroying all the heralds, I feel like it just calls more attention to herself. So maybe it's like a calling card, like, I'm always here? I don't know.
Yep. Well, this, do you know what this room makes me think of?
What?
This makes me think of the photos from the New York Times article of the lair under Brandon's house.
Yes, yes. Just filled with knickknacks and whatnots galore.
And stained glass windows. And anyway, jump to interlude 9, True Labor Begins. We're back with Venli for something really, really short.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, Esh and I would have loved this.
Yeah.
flying.
Yep.
Endless hills of stone, patches of green. Esh and I would have been thrilled. She'd have begun drawing maps, talking about the places she could go. Do you know who these sisters remind me of?
Who?
Dark Crystal.
Oh, yep, yep, yep.
Ugh. Anyway, they're at Kolinar. And Emily, what did you say?
Oh, Kolinar is conquered.
It is conquered, conquered.
I thought we were going to get, like, a last stand sort of a thing. Like, by the time Adolin and Shallan and Kaladin and Azure figure a way back, like, they're still fighting. But no, like it's been taken over. There's no more fighting. It's conquered.
Yikes.
Smoke rose in patches throughout the city, and many of the guard towers had been shattered. The city gates lay broken. Kolinar, it seemed, had been conquered. I'm just wondering what this is doing to everyone's collective minds across Roshar. Of, like, Kolinar...
Alethkar has fallen.
Alethkar has fallen. It's always been, I mean, always, for the last, what, 20 years, has been this huge stronghold of, you know, armies and...
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, someone destroyed it.
And, like, so Kolinar is older than the nation of Alethkar. Like, the Kolin family has lived here for generations.
Yeah.
And, whoop, here it goes. Venli has been here before. She was present when they executed Gavilar. She was one of the singers, one of the listeners who was at Kolinar the night of the Assassin in White prologue.
Oh, okay.
Yep, it says, it had been years since she'd seen Kolinar, only that once when they'd executed King Gavilar. Mm. Anyway, the villages where she was telling her story was practice. And Rhyne has brought her here. She's had a mission transfer. So that was nice and short. What were the heralds?
Just Yezrian, two Yezrians.
Yezrian,
double, Yezrian, quadruple Yezrian.
Patron of the...
Windrunners.
Windrunners. Do you want to make a guess? Do you remember what his divine attributes are?
Sapphires and loyalty and...
You're absolutely right that his gem is the sapphire. Unfortunately, the gemstones are not the divine attributes.
Right.
It is protecting and leading.
Protecting and leading. Why is it so hard to remember this?
Because there's 10 heralds and they have 2 each.
That's so many.
Do you know what? Is there a pencil around? I'm going to write down... I'm going to this table in the back of my book, and I'm going to write down so I don't have to keep looking it up online. Okay. Yezrian. Windrunners. Nan. Skybreakers. Chach. Dustbringers. Vev. Edge Dancers. Paula. Elfcallers.
Are we sure it was Paula?
Shush. Lightweavers. Shush. Batar. Dang it. You're right. Batar is an Elfcaller. Paula is a truth watcher. The Sart, Kalak, Will Shaper, Tom, Stone Warden, Ishi, Bondsmith. Okay. Do you know what? 9 out of 10 is not bad.
Not bad at all.
Thank you. Are you sure? Shut up. okay. What's up with Schlur?
He has, basically, he's been attacked. He has been captured by Herdazians, which is super embarrassing, apparently, to this light eyes of the Fifth Dawn, cousin to the High Lord himself. And he has, so apparently he's been captured, and he has been abusing women, he's been stealing things, and this man is so arrogant. He's just like, these stupid Herdazians, they're so dumb. And when they're saying, you know, the general wasn't even a light eyes, and they're giving him, here are all your options. One, you can either die by the sword, except you're not going to be just beheaded. Like, every woman you abuse is going to get a swing at you, and that's going to take forever. Two, the hammer, his legs and arms are going to be broken and he's going to be hung out in the storm. or three, he can wrestle a hog. And so Scheller says, I demand the right of ransom. You must contact my high prince and accept payment based on my rank. Ransom is for men caught in battle, the general said, not bastards caught robbing and murdering civilians. My homeland is under invasion, Scheller shouted. I was gathering resources so we might mount a resistance.
A resistance is not what we caught you mounting.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Yuck. So this dude is basically thinking he's untouchable because he's so elevated. But remember, society is a made-up construct, and so the Hardassians don't see this the same way that this Alethi does. And again, this man is so arrogant the entire time, of just like, this is so stupid, and this man is so ridiculous, and High Lord Amaram, and you know, and there were more refugees here than actual fighting men. Give Scheller a single company and he could rout this entire force. His insufferable captors led him down an incline past the cliffs and towards the shores. Soldiers and refugees alike gathered above, jeering and calling. Obviously, the Hardassian general was too frightened to actually kill an Alethi officer, so they would humiliate him by making him wrestle a pig. They'd have a good laugh, then send him away smarting. Idiots. He'd come back with an army. Like,
Now, about this general.
Yes.
What is he doing? What is he doing to spend his time while he's giving Scheller these options?
They put manacles on him and he busts out.
And apparently, he has also faced this hog before.
Yes.
And got away.
And so the guy's like, well, this is going to be really, really hard. And the thing is that Scheller is going to be oiled down and be slippery. And usually, yeah, it's the other way around. You, like, grease up a pig and chase hog. It. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd say good luck, boss, but I got 3 marks on you not lasting a full minute. Still, who knows? When the generals was trained down here, he got out in less. Of course, the general likes this kind of thing. He's a little weird. I have 0 proof of this. The general has got to be the Lopin's cousin.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yeah, like, yes.
Like, the way that they're not sharing his name and he's just the general, the general, the general. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is someone important. Keep an eye out for this guy.
Okay.
Because we've seen Azhish the Collector come back. We've seen Risen come back.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen Isik come back.
When's Mem coming back?
Rafel. But it's always fun to see people from the interludes pop up again, right?
Yeah, yeah. But apparently this hog is more of a nickname because an enormous claw broke the surface of the ocean, which is where they took him down. And so it's some sort of great shell. I thought they were going to, like, put him in front of a white spine or something.
World building question, science question. So we know that gravity is different on Roshar, which allows Bridgman to grow to an outstanding height.
Ridiculous heights.
That would also mean that you can go much deeper in the ocean before the pressure becomes too crushing.
Mm-hmm.
So does this mean that there are creatures in the Rosharan ocean that are, like, exponentially larger than creatures from the Earth ocean?
I would believe that.
I mean, now, maybe blue whales are big.
Maybe this is a literal lobster that's just, like, huge, yeah, now, the size of a tiger or something.
That's so cool. Anyway, this reminds me of a story that Teft told Adolin. Nope, Teft told Kaladin in the first book, Eyes of Red and Blue.
Yes, I actually thought of that when they were reading this, so.
Which I believe is a Reishi Isles deal, maybe? Mm-hmm. Maybe. But it seems the Hardassians have
their
something similar
own version.
All right, chapter 11, her reward. Interlude 11. What?
The heralds.
Who are the heralds? There's so many interludes. Who are the heralds in front of Scheeler?
We have Telenalet and we have Nayland because justice is being freaking served.
I love that.
I love that this man is just like, I can do whatever I want, and someone else will pay to get me out of it.
Oh, he mentioned that Amaram would pay to get him out of it. He's one of Amaram's guys. Does this surprise us?
No.
No. Does this surprise us? No. So Telenalat, patron herald of the Stone Wardens, represents being dependable and being resourceful. And I would say this general character we just met.
Oh, yeah.
This Herdazian Houdini.
I love that.
The hint of gray and the thin mustache on his upper lip. I love him. Okay, fine. Interlude 11, her reward.
We're back to Fenley. I'm so excited. And she has named her little spren Timber. Not like, I'm going down, it's I'm going yelling down. Timber. T-I-M-B-R-E, which is a musical term. Which I love that for her.
Love that for her.
Yeah.
Anyway, Emily. Venley's got a little spren buddy.
Yes, she does. And the little spren's so curious. And yeah. So, you know, anyway. It's so cute. This little spren is so cute. I wanna wrap it up and cuddle it.
Does Timber remind you of any other, does Timber's attitude, okay, listen, I'm not gonna ask the question. I'm just gonna say, Timber reminds me of Pattern and reminds me of Syl when we first meet them.
Yes, it's very curious and very childlike.
Is it confusing Venli for a human? Can a listener even have a nail bond? That seems like that's not how it would work.
So many things. Either, no. And it's going to go off and find another human, and she's going to be really, really sad about it. Or two, there are more things in heaven and hell, Horatio, than in whatever it is. What is it? There are more things in... Finish the quote.
Oh, sorry. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy.
There you go.
Sorry. I assumed you could quote Shakespeare by yourself.
Obviously, I was struggling greatly.
All the world is a stage, and men and women merely players.
All right. So, Venley has not been banished, but she has to stay in this little hut, which they're like, oh, it's to make you, like, mysterious and, like, hermity, and so, like, They're basically building a legend around her and like controlling the narrative of who she is and everything, because they bring people to her so that she can tell the story. But they didn't bring people when they usually do it. It's because the storm is coming through, and even though Venley is, she's not revered. She's obviously important to their plans, but she's not revered, and she had to like fight to get like windows cut out in this hut and storm shutters put in and things like that. And this little spren is out like being like, ooh, I'm gonna go outside. Ooh, I'm gonna go outside. Ooh, I'm gonna go outside. And Fenley's like, no. They are looking for spren like you. Descriptions of your kind and others have been spread all through the city. And so the spren's like, it's pulses to annoyance, and then it's like, fine.
Fine. Ugh. All Fenley had ever wanted was power.
Yes, and she's thinking about Eshonai, and how Eshonai was always like the one to look up to, and how she always had words of wisdom like, control the form, don't let it control you. But
her mate is dead.
Her mate is dead. Her sister's dead. And now she gets terrifying visions where she gets burned alive to a crisp. And this is not even the first time it's happened.
Mm-hmm. Hey, but in the midst of all this, we find out that the Everstorm has a regular schedule. How often does an Everstorm come?
Every 9? It came about every 9 days. And this was the second since her arrival.
And like a Rosharan... A Rosharan week is 10 days.
So once a week?
Yeah.
Ugh.
But how long can you keep... Okay, sorry. Now I'm jumping back to her thoughts about power. Mm-hmm. Her thirst for power. And she's like, I'm the wrong one. I'm the wrong one. I can't do this. And then she seems to keep... Sorry. She seems to hear Eshonai's voice. How long can you keep being two people, Venley? How long will you vacillate?
Yep. And, again, we're getting some Shallan back and forth here. We actually get quite a bit of Shallan vibes from her and then also in Dalinar's chapter.
Ugh. Yes. But she gets, like you said, she gets visions during the high storm like Dalinar. Odium comes to her and is like, you are not doing it good enough.
Yep. And, this part. She could no longer see. The fire had claimed her eyes, pain, agony. But she couldn't bend to it, for the god before her demanded all of her attention. The pain of her body being consumed was nothing compared to him. Because we remember Dalinar sees Odium for who he is in one of his other chapters and how it, like, almost destroys him. And then Odium's like, oh, why don't you take a seat and I'll get you some water. Odium's a bad dude.
So this is pretty awful. And she's just, like, kept and tortured for the entire length of this storm. Mm-hmm. And when it's done, she can't even find... She can't even hear the old rhythms again in her mind. She can't find peace.
I think he's trying to burn them out of her.
Ooh, mm-hmm. I love that.
Thank you.
I can't do it, she whispered to Derision. You've got the wrong sister. The wrong sister had died. The wrong sister lived. Venli had schemed to return their gods. This was her reward.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go into part four.
Defy, sing beginnings, except we need to talk about the heralds, Megan.
Tell me about the heralds, Emily.
It's just K-pop Kelek here.
He is the herald of the Will Shapers. That's me. and he represents being resolute and a builder. Doesn't feel like Venli's got a lot of resolve here, but maybe it's promising. I mean, we saw him in her other chapter too, so maybe she's building her resolve.
Mm-hmm. All right, for voices, I'm going to give the brief overview and then I think we can get into it unless you want to do it a different way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is 3 years since the rift. Dalinar is still heavily affected by it to the point that he can't even be in the same room when there's a fire in the grate. Because it's just so awful. And Gavilar is entertaining guests who are basically there negotiating their surrender. Because they've kind of painted this as like Gavilar, everyone in the land knows that if you get out of line, he will send the Blackthorn after you. And he has no control when the Blackthorn is off his leash. So Dalinar is also being used as a propaganda puppet. He goes out looking for something to drink, and he ends up getting drunk, and he overhears some conversations that his family has about him, and he just has a really bad time of it all. This poor man.
Anyway, he has some interactions with his children.
Yeah, there's that. Like, he's going back to his room after this, and he realizes Renarin has started burning incense, which is the scent of Evie, to him. And so he's like, I can't even go to my own rooms. And he passes soldiers in the hallway. And one of them is his Adolin. And his dad is just like, you shouldn't be talking to me because that's too formal. And Adolin, instead of being like cowed, he's like, okay, I'll do better.
Okay. But like, he didn't wilt between stern words when censured Adolin only tried harder. Can we actually read their whole conversation?
Yeah.
Do you want to be Dalinar or Adolin?
I'll be Adolin.
Okay. That's not a standard issued uniform, soldier.
I know. I had it specially tailored.
Parenthetical. Storms. His son was becoming a fop.
Father, did you get my message? I've got a bout set up with Tenethar. Father, he's ranked. It's a step toward winning my blade. Father?
You're in uniform, soldier. Your tone is too familiar. Is this how I taught you to act?
Sir, I'd be proud if you'd watch my bout this week. I think you'll be pleased with my performance.
I'll be there, soldier. And we'll watch with pride. Somebody is conditioning their son on the best way to win their father's love. No wonder Dalinar thinks so little of him.
Yeah.
Because Dalinar can only communicate in the very structured confines of the military hierarchy. He he doesn't know how to give love and affection, but he knows, ugh. Like, Adolin's so happy in this moment, but this scene is so sad. Mm-hmm. But also, this is probably more attention than Gavilar gives Elokar. So really, nobody, none of the Colins are winners in this situation.
None of them.
Anyway, Dalinar runs into a beggar that we've met before.
After he's like, I need a drink, but I can't go to the cooks because they tattle on me. And he tries Gavilar's rooms, but they're all empty. Like, he is desperate to drink alcohol that will, like, quiet whatever's going on in his head.
Mm-hmm.
And so this beggar that he runs into, we learn some interesting things about him.
Yeah, hey, when did we see this beggar before?
Was this the one that talked to the collector?
No.
Oh.
We saw this beggar in Zeth's prologue. He's at the beggar's feast, and he says, have you seen me? Which is a line that he repeats here.
Oh.
And when you saw that beggar, your first guess was, is that Hogath?
That's right.
It was not Hogath.
It was not him.
There is no Hogath. But anyway, tell me about Ahu.
So he apparently hears voices all the time. And today they're soft. They're chanting about ripping him apart, eating his flesh, drinking my blood. And later on, because he and Dalinar know each other. This is something that happens enough when Dalinar can't find anything to drink, because this beggar always has alcohol on him. And Ahu asks, which one got to you, little child? The black fisher, the spawning mother, the faceless? Moloch is close. And Dalinar's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Madness, Ahu said, then giggled. I used to think it wasn't my fault. But you know, we can't escape what we did. We let them in. We attracted them, befriended them, took them out to dance and courted them. It is our fault. You open yourself to it and you pay the price. They ripped my brain out and made it dance. I watched. So,
yep.
He is talking about the unmade here.
He is talking about the unmade.
Ugh.
Physical description of this guy. He has black matted hair, scraggly beard. His skin was dark for an Alethi.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And he smells terrible.
And he knows a lot about the unmade. He knows real names, Moloch, and he knows nicknames. Blackfisher, Spawning Mother, the Faceless.
Mm-hmm. So they're both getting drunk, and they're both passing the bottle back and forth. It's in a stout, dark bottle, and Ahu doesn't know what it is, but he says it tastes good. Dalinar describes it as a burning wine, no sweetness to it at all. A white, though he didn't recognize the vintage. Storms, it smelled intoxicating. Is it Horn Eater white?
It might be, yeah.
Because Dalinar only goes for the strong stuff. I don't know if Horn Eater is a wine, though.
I think it's vodka, but I don't know what it's made from.
Okay.
I'm gonna point out, we've heard the word the Black Fisher before.
Okay.
From one of the death rattles in the first book. Let me no longer hurt. Let me no longer weep. Diganarthus, the black fisher, holds my sorrow and consumes it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, so one, I'm interested to know how this guy knows the names of these, because he says, we let them in. We attracted them, befriended them. And it sounds like he's talking about Spren, at least that's what it sounds like to me, where, like, it's someone he interacted with, because so far it seems like the Unmade just, like, come up and, like, happen to people, but it seems like this guy, like, invited them in, and, like, that's how he interacted with them. It wasn't a surprise for him.
Mm-hmm. They chant about ripping me apart. Eating my flesh, drinking my blood. Gross.
Gross.
Hey, do you think this is literal or figurative?
I think it's literal. I would not put that past the Unmade to do that literally.
Cool. Sounds like he got hella tortured then.
Is it Is it to Lenalat?
No, but that's such a good guess because he is given the same physical description as to Lenalat, right?
Yeah. Is it one of the heralds?
Is it one of the heralds?
Is it Yezrian?
How many?
Is it Yezrian? How because many? He's at the beginning How? Of this chapter. Megan,
you know what?
Did I guess?
I'll give it to you. This is another herald.
Yes, is it Yezrian?
It is Yezrian.
Yes!
So there were a number of heralds in the first prologue. The Zeth prologue.
Oh, at the feast. Why were they
at
there?
At the feast. I don't know, but Shalash was not there, but like it was mentioned that Shalash's statue was destroyed. Mm-hmm. So she had recently been in the palace. This is Yezrian.
Okay.
And then Nail and someone else, one of the other heralds, a guy, was seen talking to Elokar.
Okay.
And in fact, we see those two again talking to Yasna. So you've got one of the dude heralds was there.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't Talm. We've already got Yezrian and Nalm. Naylin. It wasn't Ishar. So it has to be...
Shoot. Kalek.
Yeah! So we've seen... This is one of the heralds that you've seen already.
Excellent. How come we haven't seen all the girl heralds? Why do we have to see the stupid boy heralds?
We saw Shalash.
We saw one.
There is a really cool fan theory about where what happened to Chach.
Okay.
But I don't want to tell you until the end of this book.
Okay, okay.
But I'll tell you before we start Rhythm of War, because that was an established fan theory before Rhythm of War came out.
Dalinar.
So Dalinar's just drinking with the King of the Heralds right now.
Oh. I wonder if he'll recognize him when... Like, I don't know. Now that he has a bond with the Stormfather, if Ahu shows up again and the Stormfather be like, hey, you. but he comes back and overhears his family plotting to give him an intervention.
Intervention.
Because...
Well, no, Adolin wants an intervention, and Gavilar's like, eh. He's a soldier. He'll fight it off.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's down with the beggars again, another voice said from inside. Elokar, that little boy, why did he sound like a man? He was only how old? And like...
Elokar's in his 20s at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And so basically everybody knows, everyone knows Dalinar's like journey to find a drink. He tried the serving room again first. Seems he forgot he drank that all last time. Honestly, if there's a bottle hidden in this palace anywhere, that drunken fool will find it. But yeah, Dalinar's just like, oh, I just got drunk enough to forget, and now I'm remembering again. And so he just goes and, like, falls on the couch and is just like, nope, I'm not dealing with this.
Well, and who's the herald in front of this chapter?
It's Yezrian, Yezrian,
it's Yezrian. Hey, he's not doing that good.
No, he is not.
He seems to be doing the worst out of all the heralds that we saw. This is the guy that you called Tony Stark in the prelude.
Yeah, this is Tony Stark at his lowest.
When he's holding Peter Parker's disintegrating body.
Beep, 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 beep.
This is not the Marvel. Everyone knows what happens in Infinity War.
Do they?
Listeners, did I spoil the movie for you?
They
won't
be able to know because I'm going to beep it out.
Don't beep it out. I never get what I wish for. All right. Chapter 89, Damnation. Give me that epigraph.
Well, first, there's a map.
Tell me about the map.
I am dumb because it looks like it is. It looks like it's an ocean map. But it has Kolinar at the very, very top, but not where any land is.
And in Shadesmar, the land and the water are...
Flip-flopped!
Yeah.
Got it.
So that is that little X in the ocean with nothing around it.
Uh-huh.
That's where our heroes came through.
Got it. Okay. Okay, it's called the portion... So this is a portion of the Sea of Lost Lights. We've got the Smolderbrand channel where there's a note that says, I met Smolderbrand, stole this map from her. We're supposed to avoid at all costs the caretaker of laughter. Thalen City has a note that says, I hate this lake. My personal map of the requested area, including notes from previous errands. Spren fishing is illegal here, but their jail is nicer than most.
So we've got the Burning Gardens, Ravidsdath, Emberdark.
There's a boat there. Is that the boat from Shallan's journey?
We'll find out.
Okay.
So if you would like to turn to the map at the beginning of Oathbringer.
Okay.
You can see this. You can see where Kolinar is just above the K in Alethkar.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see where the opposites are.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Since water and land are flipped, these long squiggly shapes,
mm-hmm.
those are rivers that in Shadesmar are roads.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see Ral Alorum. We talked about that in the last chapter.
We did.
Okay.
City of Shadows.
Cool, cool, cool.
Dalen City, Carbronth. So it looks like Ravsdoth might be near where Carbronth is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just above Thalen. That's the Frostlands down there. So around this area is where Shallan fell into Shadesmar because of the deep. And this would be where Yasna crossed into Shadesmar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where she came out where she came out when she comes back. But where's Rathalos? Okay, so Celebrant is where Rathalos the Rift was.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure. This, yeah. Yeah, cool. Isn't that fun?
Very cool.
All right, now can we read the epigraph?
Yes.
Did you have fun looking at the map?
I did. Thank you for indulging me. This is 89, Damnation. My research into the Unmade has convinced me that these things were not simply spirits of the void or nine shadows who moved in the night. They were each a specific kind of spren endowed with vast powers. From Hesse's Mythica, page 3. So, they were endowed with vast power. Did Odium just pick 9 random spren and say, you're it? Or are these, like, one-of-a-kind spren? Or are they, like, the masters of each of their races of spren?
We don't know, but Sia and Nat did say, we were made and then unmade.
Ugh, I don't like that. I'm going to read a part. Adolin had never bothered imagining what damnation might be like. Theology was for women and scribes. Adolin figured he'd try to follow his calling, become the best swordsman he could. The Ardents told him that was enough and he didn't need to worry about things like damnation. Yet here he was, kneeling on a white marble platform with a black sky overhead, a cold sun, if it could even be called that, hanging at the end of a roadway of clouds. Like, ugh!
All the descriptions in here are great. Listeners, we can't read you the whole chapter, but you've got to check it out. This is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Light exploded to Adolin's left. Kaladin storm blessed, pulling in power, floated into the air. Beads rattled, and every monster in the writhing throng turned, as if one, to fixate upon Kaladin.
Mm-hmm.
And Shallan is like, buddy, that's a bad idea.
Slow your roll.
Now, he's worried. He's like, where's Drahi and Scar, our soldiers? Where is everybody? Mm-hmm. And Shallan's like, they are back there, and we're in Shadesmar.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
And Yasna, take note of what Shallan says. She tells them where you are. It's not like, I'm too busy to tell you what's going on. If Yasna had been here, she would have been doing other radiantly stuff and would ignore everybody else and just be like, shush. I'm doing important things.
Okay, well, maybe Yasna might have learned from her last trip to Shadesmar.
I doubt it.
But anyway, the blue girl, Kaladin, is like, Kaladin, please. And the only one who doesn't seem frightened was the strange Spren woman with the scratched out eyes and the skin made of rough cloth.
Because she's finally home.
They weren't empty sockets. Instead, she was like a portrait where the eyes had been scraped off. So it's not like gory and she's been stabbed. It's like that part of her face is like a painting. And do you know what this reminds me of?
Shalash?
Yep.
I wonder if this is a Shalash spren, according to that would be under Shalash's radiance.
Unfortunately, pattern is under Shalash's radiance.
Oh, dang it. That's right. Dang it, that's right.
So Azure is like, hey, we're in Shadesmar. It's the realm of thought. So Shallan and Azure know where this is. Azure's been here before. She passed through here when she came to your land. Azure traveled through Shadesmar to get to Roshar. Emily, that is one of the main ways people world hop.
Is through Shadesmar?
Is through Shadesmar. Because Shadesmar is not Roshar specific.
Oh. So why is it spren specific?
Well, it's because it is the cognitive realm and spren are cognitive beings.
Okay.
So I would bet, okay, Cosmere scholars, I don't know this for sure, but you know the Aeons in...
I was about to ask about them, yeah.
Yeah, I think the Aeons would have a similar sort of presence in the cognitive realm as well. So we live in the physical realm, but our bodies in Brandon Sanderson's world building, our bodies are our soul, our mind, and our body. Mm-hmm. So the physical, the cognitive, and the spiritual.
Yeah.
And the spiritual realm is, I'm pretty sure the spiritual realm is where your spirit goes when you die.
Okay.
And I don't know of any human being that we've read about so far who's traveled into the spiritual realm. But the physical can travel into the cognitive realm because of all the investiture and all the magic. So the cognitive realm can interact with the physical plane.
Got it. Yep. Until the next time I forget.
Anyway, the woman with the scratched out eyes just screams.
When Adolin tries to summon the shard blade. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, buddy. I want him to give her a hug and be like, I'm sorry.
And Adolin knows Pattern. He's talked to Pattern before. He hasn't. So this means he's never seen or spoken to Syl. Mm-hmm. But he has talked to Pattern. And he says, that is your sword. She is quite dead. I don't think you can summon her here. He cocked his bizarre head, looking at Azure's blade. Yours is different. Very curious. Yes, those spren above us are the souls of the Oathgate, and that one deep beneath us is likely one of the Unmade. It must be very large on this side. Emily, which Unmade do you think it is?
I think it's Yelagir, the Heart
of the Revel, and Sia'anat.
I would say Heart of the Revel, because it was so big there in... I thought Sia'anat was one of the two hanging in the sky.
No, those... So, Pattern points out, those are the souls of the Oathgate.
So the Oathgate has two souls?
Mm-hmm.
Why? One for going and one for coming?
No. I'm going to say Rafo.
Okay.
Okay. Syl is like, Kaladin's not well. And Kaladin's like,
understatement of the century.
I have to be well. How's he doing?
Not good.
How's Cal doing? Not good.
Not good. Oh. It's so funny, though. Even getting thrown into Shadesmar cannot bust him out of this, like, depths of despair. And I'm not making light of that. I'm not. I'm just saying what happened to him affected him.
Yeah. Oof. But they spot some land in the far distance, probably the Kolinar River.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when a gigantic hand, an absolutely colossal hand, reaches up and out of the beads.
They're like, we got to go.
So Shallan is trying to figure out what to do. She's sorting through the beads. And there are hundreds of little spren climbing around the spheres.
Mm-hmm.
What are those?
Those are the souls of the people that they left behind. Right?
No, those look like candles in Shadesmar.
Oh, those flames are the souls of the people, while the spheres represent the souls of the objects.
Yep.
So, oh, the little things are, they're Spren, right?
Yeah, there's little Spren. I imagine them looking like Sour Patch Kids for some reason. I honestly don't know. I don't know what they are.
Okay.
Like little orange and green Spren climbing around the spheres.
Mm-hmm. But they sift through it, and I love at one point they find a bead that is the palace itself, and she's like, too big, too big. And they finally find like the bead that represents the control. It's not the control room. The Oathgate control building.
Yeah, the little building they were in before.
So they get that and the bead of a door, and they take turns. They raise the beads in the control building, and they climb on that, and then they raise the door, and they climb on that, and they just like hopscotch their way across. And I don't know how big the door is, but I'm pretty sure, Jack, both of you could have fit on it.
Listen, it is not about can two people lie on a flat door on the ground. The fact that they could both be on top of the door is no problem. It's that the door wasn't buoyant enough under the weight to hold them up. So while it had the surface area to fit two people, you see as Jack tries to climb on that the door starts to sink. It's not about the movie Kazam, okay?
You Jackapologist. Now,
Mythbusters. He died so she could live,
Spoilers!
Emily.
Spoilers!
The boat sinks and nearly everyone dies. Have you even seen Titanic?
Once in college.
All right, listen. Mythbusters did show that if Rose and Jack had been able to take their life jackets off and stuff them beneath the door, that would have improved the buoyancy enough for them both to be on it. But neither of them are scientists. They both had hypothermia at this point. And listen, also Jack was too tired to climb onto the door.
I'm doing a bit.
It's... Just like I'm letting my anger drain away. Let your emotions flow down the creek. Okay, I'm done.
Thank you for letting me be a pill.
All right. Something that Shallan realizes that's pretty bad is without Shallan and Kaladin there, their squires lose their access to Stormlight.
That's right. And like, again.
So Drahi and Scar are no longer going to be glowing.
Mm-hmm. And Kaladin's worried about that. Like, yeah.
Yep.
But we find out that the two Spren in the air, one is red. And I don't know who says this. That's why
Syl.
We're here.
Syl points it out. Oh. Syl points it out.
That's why we're here. The Oathgate. Do you remember those two Spren in the sky? Those two are the gateway soul, but the red coloring, they must be his now. That's why we ended up here instead of going to Yirithiru.
Sya and Nat, Shallan thought. She said she was supposed to kill us, but that she tried not to. So she just teleported them. So I think originally, Odium was like, if anybody uses the Oathgate, destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
And Sya and Nat transported them here instead.
Yep.
Okay, poor Adolin. Poor Adolin is having a crisis of identity.
Yes.
Because he's like, I'm not magic. I'm not anything. I can't summon my shard blade.
I was hoping that he would have a Spren, and he technically has a Spren, but it's his dead sword.
He has a Spren, but that is not good. No. And Stormfather told us that, like, dead Spren, that's it. Their Radiant broke their oaths and died. There's no fixing that.
But what if someone comes along to heal their heart?
When a hero comes along. With the strength to help the Spren. Oh, hey, I don't think we mentioned
a song last week.
The song last time, but someone in chat, Priscilla, asked for a specific song.
Okay.
So I'm going to find that. She said Moash is channeling Epiphany from Sweeney Todd, but the other one she said
is
was...
Is that the... They all deserve to die.
I
love that song. It's a song I blast in my car more than I should.
Scrolling past everybody calling you a witch for being like, what if they went to Shadespar?
Listen, you do this with TV. I do it with books.
Uh-huh. Listen, I know she said it, but I cannot remember what it was. Okay, so I guess by default, it might be Epiphany from Sweeney Todd. Or, listen, there's got to be a song about murder. Or make love, not war. Oh, it was Why Can't We Be Friends?
Oh, that's the one I suggested.
That was it. And then chat was like, yeah, that should be it. So
we'll do Why both Can't of We them. Be Friends? We'll do both of them because okay. I love the Sweeney Todd one. Meg, how do you get into the Discord? What are you talking about?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry. I'm a slack-a-lackin'. Well, if you want to get into our Discord, head over to patreon.com/sismadeMeViewIt. At $3 a month, you're in the Discord, and you get to come to fun live read events like the end of part 3 of Oathbringer that we had just a couple weeks ago. I mean, just a couple days ago. Wow, time is not real. At $7, you get all the episodes early, thanks to Emily. And at $12 a month, you get our super secret special patrons-only Marvel Cinematic Universe feed. We're about a third of the way done at this point. We're just about to hit Infinity War.
Yeah.
We're...
Babe, 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 babe.
Hey, as they are... As Adolin's, like, freaking out... Oh, sorry. I wanted to talk about, like, Adolin can't summon his sword and a lot of his identity is in there. If we flash back to that scene he just had with Dalinar when he was little, that, like, winning his sword and being accomplished as a soldier was the only way he was able to connect with his father. And, like, it adds this new layer to the beginning of Way of Kings when we first meet the Kolins. And Adolin is absolutely adamant about following every single proper military procedure, yep, because that is how he wins approval from his father. And Renarin, for being not a soldier, has no way to emotionally connect with his father.
None.
Which is one of the reasons why he's like, everyone says it's okay for me to not be a soldier, but my father is the Blackthorn. What am I supposed to do?
My anyway. Father, the inventor of the toaster pop.
My inventor of the toasted what? Popped hearts. Okay.
That was really terrible. I loved it.
Anyway, while Adolin is having this little mini self crisis,
well, he can just connect with his dad by being king and his dad trying to take over the kingdom. And then they'll really have soldierly things to talk about.
Oh, so many things to talk about. Anyway. While Adolin's having this self-crisis, he is able to put that aside and go over...
Grieve later.
...to Kaladin and say, hey, it'll be all right.
It's okay, buddy.
I survived Bridgeport, Kaladin growled. I'm strong. Sorry, I'll be serious. I survived Bridgeport, Kaladin growled. I'm strong enough to survive this. I'm pretty sure you could survive anything. Storms, Bridge Boy. The Almighty used some of the same stuff he put into shard blades when he made you. Kaladin shrugged, but as they walked onto the next platform, his expression grew distant again. Hey, do you think Adolin sees a similarity between his dad after losing Evie and Kaladin in this scene?
I bet. Because Kaladin's just ruminating over, like, the thoughts are just going in a circle. I couldn't make them see. I couldn't protect them. I'm supposed to be able to protect people, aren't I? And I think Kaladin can see that, or I think Adolin can see Kaladin is just spiraling and is just going to go in just like a thought cyclone. Mm-hmm. And so he goes, hey, you really think that strange friend with the weird eyes is my sword? Like, he deliberately is drawing Kaladin into a conversation to distract him.
I'm so glad you said this. Mm-hmm. Not only that, he's playing dumb.
Yes.
Because people love to correct people when they're wrong.
Yes.
I think we can see Adolin do this in conversations with Shallan throughout the series.
Mm-hmm.
That he will say something obviously wrong on purpose and it'll pull whoever he's talking to like into the conversation. I also feel like this is how he interacts with Renarin. I'm thinking about their conversation when Renarin heals his arm at the beginning of the books, that he's so good at non-sequiturs that pull all of the neurodivergent losers around him. back to where they are and out of their thing.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, Adolin glanced over his shoulder and shivered. What do you think about this place? Have you heard of anything like it? Do you have to talk right now, Adolin? I'm frightened. I talk when I'm frightened. Kaladin glared at him as if suspecting what Adolin was doing. I know little of this place, he finally answered, but I think it's where Spren are born. Adolin kept him talking. As Shallan created each new platform, Adolin would lightly touch Kaladin on the elbow or shoulder, and the bridgeman would step forward. Kaladin's Spren hovered nearby, but she let Adolin guide the conversation.
I think Syl and Adolin would be great friends. Can you imagine the shenanigans those two would get up to?
That's what Zeth is doing. Shenanigans. Dang, what a good job. Yeah. Anyway, and he's trying to help out Shallan as well, who put in so much effort. Like, Shallan's normally a chatterbox, and she put in so much effort and concentration to get them to the river.
Here's the thing. Shallan is really turning it around for me here, because she's, like, kind of their expert, and she's just taking charge. And I think it is Shallan herself. I don't think it's any of her alters.
I agree.
I think it is really her.
So, Adolin's been down on himself, down on himself, down on himself. I think he's going to be the linchpin of the group in this situation. He's keeping everyone together and focused, and he is so good at knowing what emotionally people need. Mm-hmm. This is great. There's a moment I want to point out. Azure's hair changes color.
And Adolin's like, oh, it's an effect of being in this weird place.
Oh, but Emily, what is it really?
It's really Vivenna. Like, I mean, Vivenna's that's their heritage. Yeah, her magic hair.
Mm-hmm. As they made improvised beds from their... Oh, yeah. And once they get to safety, Adolin's like, we are camping.
Yeah.
We are camping right now.
Yeah.
Adolin looks one last time at the city, standing witness to the fall of his birthplace. Storms, he thought. Elokar. Elokar is dead. Little Gav had been taken, and Dalinar was planning to abdicate. Third in line was Adolin himself.
King. I'm so excited for King Adolin!
And I want to point out that Wit's advice to Shallan about... Wait a second. I want to make sure this is actually advice Wit gave to Shallan here and not something I'm making up. When she is lost in front of
the rebel.
When she is lost to the heart of the rebel. And she calls out for Wit. Okay. Whew. Be ruled as a king is ruled by his subjects. Mm-hmm. Make Shallan so strong the others must bow. I think what Adolin's doing here is an excellent example of a leader being ruled by the people that he's leading. Mm-hmm. Not that Adolin's team captain. If anything, Shallan would be team captain here in Shadesmar. Mm-hmm. But Adolin, like, using what he can to help out the different people of the group. So even though his normal skills, his combat skills are useless here, doing what he can to make sure that the group can function as a whole is so important. And wouldn't it be nice to have someone qualified to govern on the throne of Alucard?
Yes.
Sorry, Elokard.
Well, the thing anyway, is, Adolin wants to be a duelist. He doesn't... Does he want to be king?
I don't know. He'll have to.
He'll have to.
Unless Dalinar unabdicates.
And then, no, Dalinar has to stay abdicated. And then Adolin can abdicate, and Renarin can rule. Or Yasna. Just
women can't be king.
Everything is changing.
Women can't
this
inherit.
Can change. This can change. They so many.
Also, with all of this, who says there's even an Alucard to rule
That's
anymore?
True. Maybe it's just a circle of tents. Who wants that?
Yeah, who wants that? Give me them heralds.
We have Naylin. And
no.
No, we don't. We have Ishar.
No.
We have Ishar.
No! Try again! Soldier!
Telenalet.
Yeah!
You're so angry with me.
Sorry, I'm sleepy.
I'm sleepy. I have a whole hour ahead of you.
Sorry.
And we have Batar with the band.
Yep. Batar is the patron of the Eltscholars. Talm is the patron of the Stone Wardens. Batar's primary aspects are being wise and careful, and Talm's is being dependable and resourceful. I think Adolin does a good job with both of those. And do you know, I think Shallan is good at being wise and resourceful, and Adolin's being dependable, and they're doing power couple stuff through here.
Nice.
All right, give me the epigraph to Chapter 90, Reborn.
I have done my best to separate fact from fiction, but the two blend like mixing paint when the Voidbringers are involved. Each of the Unmade has a dozen names, and the powers ascribed to them range from the fanciful to the terrifying. From Hesse's Mythica, page 4. Okay, I find it interesting that they specifically talk about powers in this epigraph. It has been mentioned, I want to say, maybe once before. I want to say in, like, the previous chapter we read about the different ideals and how, like, each one you get a power boost. And here we find specifically that Naylan's followers are only expected to reach the third, maybe fourth ideal, but that there are five, but that, like, no one else says the fifth one. They're not a secret. That's something that Zeth, haha, welcome back, my boy. Is very surprised about, and I'm wondering, is when you say the fifth one, if you become a herald.
Ooh. We could replace the heralds.
Yeah. They're obviously not having a grand time of it. I would think they'd want to not do this anymore.
I just take a nap.
I've been expecting them to be like some mythical, magical beings from other planets.
Coming back to save us all?
They could just be dumb, 10 dumb people who were like, hey, we found a magic book and we read out of it and now we're endowed with godlike powers. Let's create a whole society around us.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Hey, who's back?
Zeth is back!
Yay! Where is he?
He's with the Skybreakers. I don't know where he is exactly. He got let... Okay, here's the sad backstory. Naylan discovered, oh, guess what? All the people that had been killing to keep the desolations from happening. It happened anyway. So he just left Zeth wherever he was to go off and figure this out. And the Stormbreakers had to, like, or the Skybreakers had to come back and pick Zeth up and bring him back to their training ground. Zeth got abandoned again, this poor man.
He just left him alone.
Ugh. But we find out, okay, I don't know if we find out here, but this is the first time I remember it happening here, is that the Skybreakers never broke their oaths.
Yeah.
Ever. So they're still going, and they've been training people this whole time. So does that mean their sword sprens are okay?
Yes.
Okay. What are you looking up?
That picture from Marie that I told you of Zeth at the Pure Lake.
Oh, and they're at the Pure Lake. I'm so excited. That seems like such a relaxing place to be.
Look at the colors on this.
Oh, and it looks like paradise.
It. Yeah, click it, because it's a little longer than what just comes through in the message. Oh,
it looks lovely.
Yeah.
And he's even letting Nightblood be in the water.
That's bad for your sword.
Maybe not for Nightblood.
Maybe not for Nightblood.
Because they're at the lake, and the sword goes, oh, it's the lake! You should draw me, Zeth! You should draw me like one of your French girls, Zeth. I would love to see the lake. Vasher says there are magic fish here. Isn't that interesting?
Oh,
I'm just going to gush about Nightblood again and how much I love this freaking sword.
Yay! I've been warned, Sword Nimi, Zeth reminded the weapon, not to draw you except in case of extreme emergency. And only if I carry much stormlight, lest you feed upon my soul. Well, I wouldn't do that, the sword said. It made a huffing sound. I don't think you're evil at all, and I only destroy things that are evil.
See, Zeth has a heart of gold. You've been judging him so harshly this whole time, Megan.
For killing people! For murder! Sorry, the sound is big. That's going to be huge. I'm judging him for killing people in the name of his religion.
That he thought he had to do. He thought he was compelled. Listen, that doesn't excuse
Emily,
it.
Emily, we can't do this again.
I'm not saying can't. That excuses it. I'm saying he honestly, literally, honest to God, thought that's what he was supposed to do. And I get it. I get it. I get it. I get it. Just saying.
How many people would you kill?
None.
There. There you go.
But I'm not Seth. This poor boy been so harshly judged for...
Moash killed one guy. One guy. And everyone's like, evilest man in the universe. And I'm like, did you read the book one interludes? Oh, it's okay if he killed Gavilar. Gavilar was kind of an... Yeah, but he also killed 50 other guards to get there. He did. They could have been nice.
They could have been... It could have been the day of their retirement.
Yeah. He killed Bridgman.
He did. He's still okay in my book.
Okay. Anyway, do you know what's cool?
That the sword thinks Zeth is super trustworthy, and that's a direct quote.
Yeah. I think it's also cool that Nightblood can hear the voices in Zeth's head.
Oh, that's right.
Zeth heard the screams of the people he killed. Mentioning it brought the whispers to Zeth's attention. Nin had not healed Zeth's madness. He called it an effect of Zeth's connection to the powers and said he was hearing trembles from the spiritual realm, memories of the dead he killed. So that could mean that Dalinar hearing Evie's voice crying and those children crying, that might not be an hallucination.
It might be an actual thing.
That could be the actual souls of the murdered people.
Like it was as if suddenly millions of voices suddenly cried out in terror and then all were silenced. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Zeth calls him Sword Nimi. Mm-hmm. This is an honorific in... So Brandon knows Korean because he served an LDS mission in Korea. And this also happens in Japanese where you put the honorific after the name. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Nimi is respectful or diminutive. I would guess it's respectful. There you go.
Nice. We talked about this while I was reading it, but I want to make sure we bring it up. Zeth leaves a glowing after image when he moved, a sign of his soul's improper reattachment.
Oops.
Not everyone can see it, but we know Lyft can see it, and we know these people can see it, and it's because, like, it had almost taken him too long to basically reanimate. His spirit hadn't properly reattached to his body.
So, I have a concern.
Let's hear it.
So, they're swearing the first ideal. Great. Good for them. So happy. And they're finding out, like, all of the training, the five ideals, like you mentioned, the thing is, the third ideal, the ideal dedication, requires you to have bond a high spren. That's the type of spren. Mm-hmm. And once you've bonded your high spren, you got to dedicate yourself to a truth, a code that you follow. Mm-hmm. Now, Zeth has a quest in mind.
Yes.
What's the quest that Zeth
has? Destroy Shinnevar.
Yeah. So my concern is, he's planning more murders.
Just the people who set him on this path to keep them from doing the same to other people.
Now it's a central core tenet of these books that you can't protect people by killing. And I think, now listen,
that's why you get rid of everybody.
So I'm going to point out that I'm like, oh, if Zeth regrets what he's done and starts to make reparations, mm-hmm, I may turn around on him. But he's going to kill more people.
He's planning to. Doesn't mean he's done it yet. This is not Minority Report.
There's a difference between intent and it. Whoa. Okay. Hey. All right, listen, there's a difference between intent and impact.
I feel like I've set you off more times than normal today. I'm so sorry.
It's not your fault. I'm having a stupid Taravangian day, which is an indicator that the red wave is coming. And I'm snappish, not at you, at these fictional characters. I'm sorry I yelled so much when you called Tom Nalen. It's just that you never get Tom right on the first try. And I'm like, help a helmet. Now, it was expected that Zeth might have jumped straight to the third ideal, but instead he, do I belong with these youths? Zeth said, Nin treated me as something different.
He has to go to summer school.
Yep. The Everstorm's return had convinced Nin that he was wrong and he'd abandoned Zeth into Sheik. But that was when, listen, the stuff with Lift really, really reorganized Nalen's worldview. Because originally, when he first recruited Zeth, he was still, we have to kill all proto-radiants.
Yes, yes.
And this isn't about you, Zeth. This is about Nail realizing that murder is wrong. Actually, no, not that it was wrong, but that murder was useless.
Yeah.
So,
you're too late. Anyway. But yeah, we learned some more cool stuff about, again, more about the ideals. Oh, I'm sorry.
I want to apologize real fast. I think I read Zeth with kind of a snooty tone. He's not like that. He really was just asking for clarification. Mm-hmm. And he was really chill when they're like, you have to do it with everybody else. No further complaints, Key asked. It is orderly, Zeth said, and you have explained it well. Why would I complain?
See, he's reasonable.
He's planning excessive murders. Like, okay, I think the phrase cleanse Shinovar does not indicate a surgical strike against a couple people.
No, it doesn't.
This is not a good plan. It's a bad plan. It's a bad
plan. He's in a bad place.
He's actually in a really nice place.
Maybe when he gets his Spren, the Spren will be like, nope, don't do it. Don't do it. I'll take away all your powers if you do. But again, I'm finding it interesting. We're learning more about the ideals, that there are five of them. And Megan reminded me that each order has the same first ideal, but afterwards they are all different. Like Shallan had to tell a truth. Kaladin had to basically say, I will protect those who cannot protect themselves. So like each one's a little different, but you get like a huge power boost every time you do it. And I'm fascinated by, I'm fascinated by the journey of this, because the Skybreakers are very letter of the law. And here are the steps and here's the paperwork for you. You're all forgiven everything you've ever done by becoming a Skybreaker, which is, whew, good news for Zeth.
But like, okay, we don't know what religion and morality is. They are legally pardoned for their crimes. I don't know if that's the same
as being morally as pardoned.
Forgiven?
Yeah. Oh, what was my thought about building on five of them? I can't remember.
Your feedback, Kaladin is at the third ideal right now.
Okay. And, okay, so for the Skybreakers, you have to learn the lash. You speak the words, which they do hear, Zeth and his cohort. They speak the first ideal. Then you learn the lashings. Then you may speak the second ideal. From there, you will need to impress a high spread and form a bond, becoming a full Skybreaker. And then one becomes a full Skybreaker by speaking the third ideal, the ideal of dedication. But it's been centuries since anyone's even reached the fifth. Like, this last guy, he's like, yeah, it took me a couple decades to get to the fourth. But, like, what's to stop you from just literally saying the words?
So, if you remember, every time Kaladin has sworn his ideal, it's coincided with a deep self-realization. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think it's just words.
Okay.
Like, it's now, and then with Shallan, while it's not oaths, she has revealed these deep truths. These have each come at a big emotional crux moment. So it's not just like, oh, well, my third ideal is going to be this, and my fourth ideal is going to be this, and my fifth ideal is going to be this. There has to be, like, personal growth that goes with it. Okay. So, like, Kaladin's second ideal. So far, from what we've seen, okay, I'm following the pattern laid out for me. Okay. Oh, and
I'm just saying, Lip maybe
spoke an ideal too.
I'm just saying, from the hold on, what are these at the beginning of each one? The epigraphs. They have powers ascribed to them. Maybe they just got to say all their ideals at once and just go.
So boom. if you read that paragraph, it's talking about the unmade.
Yes, and the void that's what bringers. I'm saying. Is did they have to say all their ideals? And
we're talking about the radius.
Yes, my question is... My question is, maybe that's why they're so powerful. It's because they didn't say, you have to wait. Just give it to them all at once and get used to the power and then, like, be powerful.
That wasn't a question.
That was my point I was trying to get across. I'm saying, why do you have to wait? And then you answered that, so thank you. But I'm just saying, it seems like the unmade are, like, way ahead of everybody else, and don't you want that sort of advantage on your team as well with the Radiance? Why can't everybody just say all the ideals?
So you're saying taking a shortcut and just gaining immense power is better than working hard, earning, and appreciating your power.
Yes!
I'm going to say no, because Zeth got an honor blade that gave him all the powers of a windrunner with none of the checks and balances, and he used it to power people! So, Kaladin and Syl kind of talked about this in the last book, where he's like, I'm sorry, so I only get my powers as long as I do whatever you think is right? But, like, his growth from book two has made him, like, it feels different how Kaladin uses his Windrunner powers versus what Zeth did when just handed Windrunner powers, you know? And every power-up you do make does give you a big thing. Oh, okay, here's a good example. Mm-hmm. The listeners and the singers, they just get power with their forms when they get a spread.
Yeah.
But they talk about how that is weaker compared to the bond between a Radiant and their spread. So we have some pretty early Radiants right now. Third ideal Radiants. I think both Shallan and Kaladin are third ideal Radiants because that's your weapon.
What's Malata?
We don't know. We don't know anything about what Malata's doing. Yasna is also a third ideal Radiant.
Okay.
The leap in power between second ideal and third ideal Radiant. Can you imagine the difference between a third and a fourth ideal Radiant?
I want to see it on the screen. I want to see it on the page. Okay.
So what I'm saying to you is, to prove your point, yes, they would have stronger soldiers to fight Odium if we just handed out powers willy-nilly. But Radiants aren't all about fighting. Dalinar is learning to be a leader as he's unlocking his bondsmith powers. Shallan is, like, putting herself back together while she's unlocking her Lightweaver powers. And there may be advantages beyond simple combat capabilities that come with taking the long way to earn your godlike magical powers.
I guess.
Plus, being an incredible, powerful, amazing being with, bam, you're a shard now, honor still died.
That's true.
So power is no guarantee of success.
But it is helpful.
It is helpful, but I mean, think about...
I don't know why I'm being such an about this.
You just want Zeth to be the specialist, magicalist boy in the world. Well, enough about that. Tell me about the heralds at the beginning of the chapter.
It's just Chatch.
It's just Chatch. And Chenerach is the patron of the Dustbringers. Mm-hmm. And Chatch, symbolize Chatch's primary divine everything. Her primary and secondary divine attributes are being brave and obedient. I think Zeth is showing great obedience here. Okay, hammer analogy.
Okay.
Hammer analogy from Buffy. If you've got a hammer, mm-hmm. and you choke up on it, so you're holding right underneath the top of the hammer. Mm-hmm. If you try and pound a nail in, you have very precise aim with the hammer when you're holding it right by the head, but there's not a lot of power to it. Mm-hmm. Well, if you hold the hammer at the very, very end of it and try to swing it, it's a lot harder to hit it exactly where you want. You have extreme power when you just put on shard plate and you don't train how to use it. You punch your friend so hard you break his ribs. You pick up a cup and you crush it in your hand. Uh-huh. You have extreme power but no control. Mm. So by finding a balance between control and power, that gives you better success over your powers.
Did Vasher come with them to Urethiru?
We haven't seen him since Words of Radiance.
I wonder if Renarin still gets shard plate lessons. Yeah.
Yeah, dang. Why am I so stupid? I should have started this with shard plate as the analogy. Where, like,
you got there.
You have to learn the capabilities of the armor slowly in order to do creative and better things with it.
You have to go through the Training Wheels baby program to get your full Spider-Man suit capabilities.
Yeah! Yeah, otherwise, you turn on lethal mode for just some randos at a gas station and kill people. All right. This week's song, Bobbing Along from Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Perfect.
About them basically being transported to this giant ocean of glass beads.
Perfect. Perfect.
All right. Next week's assignment is about 50 pages, but it's a lot of little small chapters again. So next week, you'll be reading 91, Why He Froze. 92, Water Warm as Blood. Ugh. 93, Kata. 94, A Small Bottle. 95, Inescapable Void. And 96, Pieces of a Fabriel, and 97 Rhino.
All right, that's so many pages.
You're reading 91 through 97.
Great.
There you go.
Well, I'm excited.
I think you're gonna like it.
Thank you. I think I will. Whew. Too. I'm so excited to read this.
So we're in part four, and in books 1 and 2. Part 4 is where the Sanderlanch hits, and then 5 is pretty short wrap-up. So what could we even be going towards in a Sanderlanch in this book?
Oh my gosh, because I thought, Brandon, you keep tricking me. I thought that the battle for Kolinar was going to be the Sanderlanch. That took like 10 pages, and we're done.
And we lost. So are we going back for Kolinar?
I don't know, because, like, all the people there have surrendered, and the listeners are, like, letting them go at least, hopefully. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're the new world power, and we just have to learn to live with them.
We'll find out.
All right.
Anyway, this has been My Sister Made Me View It, covering Oathbringer by Brandon Sanderson. My name is Megan, and I gotta get back to riding my exercise bike.
My name's Emily. I gotta go to bed.
Ugh. Me too. But you know what? Forget riding the bike. I'll ride my bike tomorrow.
Okay.
I super believe in you. You're going to do so good at going right to bed.
Well, I am super believing in you and whatever you choose to do as well.
Yay! All right, here we go.
Ready, break.